The Holy Gospel according to Matthew, the 16th chapter. Glory to you, O Lord. From that time on, Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and undergo great suffering at the hands of the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be killed, and on the third day be raised. And Peter took Jesus aside and began to rebuke him, saying, "God forbid it, Lord. This must never happen to you." But Jesus turned and said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. You are a hindrance to me, for you are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things." Then Jesus told his disciples, "If any wish to come after me, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will find it. For what will it profit them if they gain the whole world but forfeit their life? Or what will they give in return for their life? For the Son of Man is to come with his angels in the glory of his Father, and then he will repay everyone for what has been done. Truly I tell you, there are some standing here who will not taste death before they see the Son of Man coming in his dominion." The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. Please be seated. One afternoon, I stepped out the front door of my church building in Jerusalem, and I saw a face that was at once very familiar and also very out of place. It was Mr. Nusaybe, the Muslim keykeeper at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, the place where Jesus' tomb is said to be. Now, almost every day, all day long, Mr. Nusaybe is found sitting on his bench there, just inside the door of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. And he's there greeting visitors and telling the story of the church and making it a welcome place. So I was surprised to see that he was standing in front of my little Lutheran church around the corner. Now, whenever Mr. Nusaybe saw me, he would scold me for not coming to pray at his church. And he would say, "Sister, when inti? Where are you? Where have you been? I haven't seen you." And it was no different on this day. He gave me a kiss on the cheek and then a little more scolding. And then he asked me about my family. In particular, he loves my mother. He met my parents when they came to visit, and he just loved my mother. And so he said, "How is your mother? They live in Texas. How are they doing?" Now, this was the hurricane season of 2017. You might remember that season. And so he was worried because he knew that my parents had lived in Texas. And I explained to them, to Mr. Nusaybe, that they had recently moved to Ohio, and so they were safe and dry, but that we were certainly praying for the people in Houston. He grabbed my arm then, and he said, with a serious look, "You know this storm is from God, don't you?" And I said, "Yes," he said. And then he smiled and he said, "This is what happens when people think they are bigger than God, and Texans think they are bigger than everything." Now, as a briefly former Texan, 22 months and 10 days to be exact, that I lived in Texas, but who's counting? I found this joke funny on one level, but as a Christian and as a pastor, I didn't find it funny at all. Because as he walked away, I wondered how many people would know that he was trying to make a joke. How many people would know that that's funny? And the problem is, not too many Christians today understand that. Whenever horrible natural disasters occur, pastors and politicians and armchair theologians try to make sense of it, to say, "How could this happen? Why were so many people hurt or displaced and killed? What did they do to deserve this suffering? There must be an explanation." Think of Pat Robertson. Think Jerry Falwell. In 2017, it was Ann Coulter. Remember her? If you don't, I'm so happy. You don't remember her. Now, that year that that hurricane hit Houston, Anne said, I don't believe Hurricane Harvey is God's punishment for Houston electing a lesbian mayor. But that is more credible than climate change. That's what she said. Now, I suppose we could give Ms. Coulter credit for taking God off the hook, letting God off the hook. But the problem is that that sort of speech is precisely why so many people believe that God would send a hurricane to punish people. That God would send a hurricane or a fire to teach people a lesson. Preachers, books, movies, and jokes all perpetuate this idea, right? That this is how God works. This is what we're told. The creator of the universe deals out disease and disability and war and hurricanes from a deck of cards so that we might have the opportunity to learn a lesson. So that if we're lucky, we might have increased faith. If you listen today long enough to the reports from Maui or from Florida or from the Carolinas, you also will hear this same theology. People saying, well, I guess this is just the cross I have to bear. I guess this is the cross I have to bear as a Christian. And this breaks my heart. I think it also breaks God's heart. It breaks my heart to think of people standing in the ruins of their burnt out homes or in disaster shelters, believing that Jesus wants them to be there. So I want to say it very clearly this morning. God didn't start a fire in Maui, and God did not send Florida a hurricane because they needed an attitude adjustment, even though maybe we think they might need one. God doesn't work that way. And God did not give you cancer so that you could be a better person. That's not how God works. Amen? Do you believe that? Amen? Amen. Furthermore, your flooded house and your cancer diagnosis, your chronic depression, or your abusive relationship are not the crosses you are asked to bear as a disciple of Jesus. That's not how discipleship works. As a pastor, people I love have come to me many times and described just those types of things. A medical diagnosis, a job loss, maybe even a particularly annoying coworker as a cross they must bear. And while it might be accurate to describe these situations as opportunities for spiritual enhancement or growth, yes, that can happen, they are not, these sufferings are not the cross of discipleship that Jesus asks of us today. When Jesus says, take up your cross and follow me, it's a specific invitation, a voluntary invitation. As Jesus prepared the disciples for the next step, which was going into Jerusalem, he told them the truth. And he said, because of the things I've been saying, because of the things that I've been doing, it's going to be rough in Jerusalem. They are going to not like me. They're going to arrest me. They're going to treat me badly. They're going to say bad things about me. They're going to kill me. He told them clearly. And then he said, if you want to join me, you also may suffer. Here's what Jesus did not say. He did not say, Andrew, here's your cross. And Philip, here's yours. And Peter, well, you're the rock, so you can handle a big one. He didn't say that. He said, I'm going to Jerusalem. If you want to come with me, be prepared. You're going to have to maybe leave some things behind, in fact, because you're going to need all of your strength to carry what we are doing. Jesus voluntarily took that weight upon his shoulders, the ultimate tool of public disgrace and violence, and made it his identifying mark. Jesus transformed the cross from a symbol of death into a symbol of life, and he invites us to join us in that same transformative, subversive effort. Jesus asks us invites us, in the context in which you find yourself today, in your context, where do you see powers and principalities working against God's gospel of love? Where do you see people suffering? And what therefore are you asked to carry? That is the cross we are to carry, not the suffering of natural disasters and cancer and oppression and occupation. Now, the bishop I first worked with in Jerusalem, Bishop Munib Yunan, he had a story that he loved to put into his sermons. And because I was one of his sermon writers, I got to write this story a lot. And sometimes he would tell me that it was a story from one of the church fathers. And sometimes he would tell me it was from the Arab literature. But I have a feeling this story was from Munib. Okay, maybe from the internet. It could have been also there. But this is the story, and he loved to tell it. He said, there once was a man who had a very strange dream. In his dream, he prayed to God, please, my cross is too heavy. It's too much to bear. Give me a different one. And so an angel came and took the man to heaven. And when they arrived in heaven, the man was in a room full of crosses, every shape and size. And the angel said, your prayers have been answered. Please choose the cross you would prefer. And the man went to the first cross, a large one made of iron, but he couldn't carry it more than a few steps. He said, it's too heavy. And so he looked at the next cross, which was made of silver. And the man said, this one is better, but oh, I see one made of gold over there. And so the man went to the cross made of gold. And then he said, well, I like white gold better than yellow gold. And then the next one was made of wood, but the man said, well, this one is too large, and besides, it put splinters on his shoulders. On and on he went, picking up and carrying the many crosses in the room, unable to decide, until the man finally said, well, you know, after all I've seen, I think I choose the cross Jesus gave me in the first place, because it's the one God gave me strength to carry. Now, I sort of feel about this story the way I felt about my friend Mr. Nasiba's Texas hurricane joke. I want to say, nope. No. That's not how God works. Except maybe there is a bit of truth there. Because first, the cross of discipleship does come in many shapes and sizes. It's different for everyone. Not everyone's path is the same. The cross of discipleship can look very different. It can look like the blisters and sore feet and lost sleep of those first responders who have been in Maui helping the people who have lost everything. The cross can look like the exhaustion of nurses on chemo wards who give not only of their expertise but of their hearts as they care for the sick. The cross of discipleship can look like standing up for yourself or for others, and then being ridiculed and persecuted or canceled because of it. When Jesus invites us to take up the cross and follow, we will not ever know what that shape or size will be. We don't know how long we're going to have to carry it or where it's going to lead us. And so I think the second truth in Bishop Yunan's funny story about the cross and which one to choose is this. Ultimately, we don't choose. Ultimately, we don't choose to carry a cross, but we do choose to follow Jesus. That's what we choose. We choose to follow Jesus, and what he has said in this gospel text is, when you choose that, crosses may come. Now, if necessary, friends, we may need to carry the cross all the way to Calvary. We may need to love God all the way to the end, just like Jesus did for us, with our whole lives, our whole selves. But Jesus also has said to us, be not afraid, For truly, whatever we carry for the sake of our neighbor and for the sake of our kingdom of heaven, God will give us the strength to do it. And we will not be alone, because this is how God works. This is how God works. God calls and God equips. God empowers and God saves. God heals and God gives life. God resurrects. God makes a way out of no way. This is what we know of God through the scriptures and through the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. Friends, there are so many who have gone before us on this path. There are so many saints who have gone before us. The great cloud of witnesses bears us up in this journey, sends us forth, and wraps us in a hug of their love and protection, so that we may go forth as ambassadors of love and justice and mercy to the whole world. In this time when the world seems to be facing so many challenges and our neighbors are experiencing so much suffering, the church, our church, has many opportunities for faithful discipleship. And there are many crosses we may be asked and called to bear. So it is always good for us to hear once again that with God all things are possible, and Jesus has said, "My burden is easy and my yoke is light." Amen? Amen. That was kind of sad. Amen?
Amen.
Amen. God makes a way out of no way. We adore you, O Christ, and we praise you, for by your holy cross, you have redeemed the world. Amen.
Amen.